is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Time machine. It is July 1754, Western Pennsylvania, although at this time it is understood as the wilderness. A young man assigned to relate to the frontier is gathered together with an Indian, a Native American companion, a Seneca, and others to confront not only the French. This is at the moment when the French and the British were fighting global wars about colonial possessions and the high seas. Not only the French, but other parts of Native America that were aligned with the French. The man's name, the young man's name, was George Washington. Helping me tell this story is Selena Zito of the Washington Examiner, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and the New York Post, because she's going to take us to that spot today that you can visit off what Selena promises me is very rural, Route 40. Selena, a very good evening to you. George Washington in the Great Meadows off Route 40. Why was he there, and what was the threat? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Thanks so much for having me. So George Washington was 22 years old at that time. It was his first time commanding, and I'll loosely use that term, a militia, part of the colonial army. He had been sent by the governor of Virginia to set up a staging area to ultimately have to get sort of the area ready, because it was under dispute between the Great Britain and France. At that time, that part of the country, it's today's for Fayette County, about 80 miles south of Pittsburgh, was sort of somewhere between New France and the colony of Pennsylvania. So there was a dispute there between between France and England. He sets up a staging area, and the Half King, the Seneca chief, who was also his scout, had told him, "Look, there's some French guys, you know, going around in the woods, and we think they're going to attack us. I think that we need to go on the offense." And so they decide in the middle of the night, and it's pouring down rain in the deep forest of the Allegheny Mountains, and they go looking for the French. They find them. There's this 15-minute skirmish, and George Washington prevails. However, the Half-King decides to kill the commander, whose name was Jumonville, and scalp him right there. So that became a problem for George Washington. He goes back down to the meadows, the Great Meadow. They build a fort around the staging area that they had already built. It's very, the fort still stands today. It's a very haphazard fort. And they prepare for the French to come because they know it's going to happen. They're not far away. They're at what was called the Forks of the Ohio, today's modern day Pittsburgh. And the French eventually come. They engage in a battle. Washington has maybe 100 troops. The French have more than likely over 1,000. And within hours, Washington surrenders. It's the first and only time he loses a battle in his career. And that moment led to the first World War. There wasn't a continent for the next 7 years that was not engaged in battle because of what happened there. It was a proxy war between Great Britain and France. Ultimately, Great Britain wins, but it also at great cost. They're deeply in debt. So who do they decide to pay the money to alleviate their debt? The colonists. They send over the stamp tax. There is a little tea party in revolt. And this tiny little battle in this tiny little county in Western Pennsylvania ends up becoming the catalyst that begins the American Revolution. That's why this place is so important.
What does it look like today, Selena? And if someone travels there in these next days or weeks, what will they find? Is there a guide?
Yes, there's a beautiful national park there. They have a great visitor center that's very interactive, that has a lot of artifacts, not just from the battle, but also from the area. This area was, you know, the gateway to the West, to be a gateway to Ohio country. And the fort is there. They have guides there to walk you through the whole battle. They have reenactors, and it's a really delightful national park. There's also sister national parks associated with it right within the vicinity. There is Germanville Glen. That is where Germanville was killed by the Half King. And there's also Friendship Hill. That was the home of Albert Gallatin, Secretary of Treasury under Jefferson, and he is the father of the National Road. He's also the father of Columbia University. He founded it. So there is a lot of rich history in that area.
And you tell me that Route 40 is the National Road. What was that? What did it represent?
So that was called the National Pike. When it was first surveyed, it goes from, I believe the impetus is somewhere near Baltimore, and goes all the way to St. Louis. It was the first foray into the West, and it was the first ability to travel to the West, to get commerce, to get people out into the West. Along it, for much of the National Pike, is the canal system, which Washington had envisioned as the way for the colonies and eventually the United States to become prosperous, which is why he bought hundreds of thousands of acres of land there as a young gentleman farmer from Virginia.
Yes, he was a surveyor. He had the surveyor's skills. Yep. And after the war, he took a trip up that route to look at the land that he laid claim to. 22 years later, after 1754, you begin your article with this scene of a man named Colonel Adam Stephen at the time. Who was he, and what did he say to George Washington right after the signing of the Declaration in Philadelphia?
Right. Washington sends him a letter. Both men served at Fort Necessity. And he said, I can't let this, I'm paraphrasing here, but I can't let this day go by without remembering that battle and the providence and the luck. Basically, he says, we were really lucky not to die. And it's important to remember that it's led to where we are today, meaning the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
That was the story that Washington remembered vividly at Fort Necessity. I just touched on another article that Selina has published most recently about Charleston, South Carolina's flag factory, the Allegiance Flag Company. And the reason I touch on it is that Joe Manchin's in this story, and I always take an opportunity to admire the senator from West Virginia, whom you know very well. The federal government can currently purchase flags that contain 50% American-made materials, according to a press release from Senator Joe Manchin. What is the mission for the Allegiance Flag Company? How do they see their role all these hundreds of years later from Fort Necessity?
Well, the owners, the founders of Allegiance Flag, and I highly recommend that people go and check out their website. Their flags are absolutely gorgeous. When I was down in Charleston, I was like, oh, I need to buy one of these. They're hand-stitched. The field of blue is absolutely stunning. So are the stars and the stripes. I've never seen a flag so absolutely gorgeous. And their mission was that every thread, every piece of material, and every person that works on each of their flags, it was made in America. And they have accomplished that. And, kudos for this young, just, you know, three young people who happened to be childhood friends and wanted this create a company that they, you know, that they could do it on their own. They would be their own bosses, but also made something with purpose. And the Allegiant flag flags are just absolutely stunning.
And you recommend them? Joe Manchin recommends them? Everyone recommends them because they're a way of connecting to that Fort Necessity story. This is the 18th century, come to the 21st century. We're going to turn to the 21st century, too. And high school football, which is a dear memory of mine, and Selena's going to help us understand how what I regarded as routine in high school football when I was a young person in the 1960s is now a matter of concern for the Supreme Court of the United States. This is CBS Eye on the World.